Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, and equal housing lender.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report for Tuesday, March 21st, 2006. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. In agricultural news, Japan is rejecting USDA answers for illegal bone material appearing in U.S. beef exports. Also, USDA is now looking for a second calf of an Alabama cow confirmed with mad cow disease. And the Energy Department is saying domestic ethanol may not meet demand during the start of the peak driving season. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, a report on U.S. efforts to deal with a potential bird flu outbreak. Yesterday, three Bush administration cabinet members discussed the issue. It's all on the Tuesday edition of your Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
Tuesday afternoon, prices settled like this in Kansas City. May wheat, 417, up 3 1/4. May wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade, 352 1/2, up 2 1/4. July, 364 3/4, up 2 1/2. May corn, 223 1/2, up 5 1/4. July, 234 1/2, up 5 3/4. September, 243 1/4, up 5. December, 253 3/4, up 3 1/4. May soybeans, 575 1/4, up 2 3/4. July, 587 1/4, up 2. August, 592, up 3 1/2. November, 603, up 1 3/4. May soybean meal, 174.10, up 80. May soybean oil, 22.83, down 8. At the Merck, March feeders, 105.10, down 52 1/2. April live cattle, 83.47 1/2, up 12 1/2. April lean hogs, 58.25, down 75. Be sure to join us tomorrow evening at the Tuscola Community Center in Tuscola for another one of our free AM 580 Agricultural Outlook panels. The meeting tomorrow night gets underway at 6:30. Panelists for the meeting include Clayton Pope of Clayton Pope Commodities, Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing, and Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities. That's at the Tuscola Community Center building in Tuscola. The meeting gets underway tomorrow evening at 6:30. Remember, there is no charge to go to the meeting and no advanced reservations are required. Joining us now on the telephone to talk about the markets is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Dave.
Well, we had a little bit of a pop on the close in the corn pit. What was going on there?
Well, you know, we started off with somewhat of a quiet day, a little bit easier to start with right out of the box, but then a little bit of buying come in. There's one professional trader at ABM Ambro was in the last few days. They bought 15,000 May 220 puts. Earlier in the week, they sold 17,000 July 220 calls early in the week and had sold 10,000 futures. They bought 6,000 May 210 calls today. So over the last 3 days, they've been the big trader in the corn pit, and of course, along with that, the local buying was triggered when those 6,000 calls were bought. So they've really been sort of trying to fence in or box in this corn market. And the main movers as far as any volume has went has been ABM Ambro.
And the May contract, all that Ambro moving pushed corn off its 217.5 support level and actually through 20 and 100-day moving averages. How does that bode for the rest of the week?
Well, you know, we got down to the RSI. Was down about 27 this morning before we started, and of course this is going to push us back up. But we were in a highly oversold condition, and then this is going to turn us around to, you know, it was a very strong finish. You know, Friday we had the close was Very good. It was a five Friday close with lower closes that way, and looked to be a negative type indication as far as things are going. But today sort of turns things back around and somewhat of a reversal here, Dave.
And it also helped the December contract somewhat, it looks like.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the corn did very well today, you know, up 3.5, you know, that 253.75. You know, we've got to get back above 56 to really turn the market around a little bit there. But the strength, the 248 level basically held and we bounced here until we see the planning intentions report. Why we're in, we're probably just sort of in a trading range here, Dave.
Between what, 50 and 100-day moving averages, something around in there?
Yeah.
All right, then let's go ahead and look at the soybean pit where we also saw a little bit of a pop. Was this carryover from the corn?
Well, I think that, you know, as we look, the beans, the basis levels had tightened a little bit. We hadn't seen a lot of movement out of South America. The Gulf basis up a penny yesterday, interior basis up about 2 cents. And I think that that, along with the oversold conditions, basically let us follow the wheat and the corn higher today. It does seem like there wants to be some commercial buying that pops into the beans now and then. March also tends to be one of the months that we do trend up in this time period. And also the one Brazilian crop estimates were coming in a little bit easier yesterday in the afternoon when we got the numbers, down about a million metric tons. They do tend to underestimate in the past and the years like that. But we are talking or reading on the newswire that the soybean growers and agronomists on a crop tour in Brazil said Monday they expect yields in northern Paraná to the number two growing soybean area to be about 60 kilogram bags per hectare, and the last government estimate was about 44. So, you know, contrary to some of the estimates we've been hearing, where the yields are doing a little better, while in Paraná it looks like they might be a little bit less.
And what does that push the overall yields to South America, Brazil in particular, too?
Well, I think that, you know, we're probably still at record yields for down there, Dave. It's whether it'll knock it down into that 57 million metric ton rather than up around the 58 million metric ton.
Any thoughts that it might be closer to 56?
I'm going to say I think it's a little above that in reality, but there's some indications and thoughts that there could be reason to think that way.
In the November soybean contract, I noted this today, and I've never asked anybody this question, so I'm going to ask you. The 20, the 50, and the 100-day moving averages are, well, they're essentially identical. They're within a quarter cent of each other. When that merging happens, does that indicate anything to you?
It's been a pretty flat market. You know, when they're all that close. But it means we're probably in a descending triangle ready to try to look to break out one way or the other, and the range is getting narrower. So I would say that that's probably what it looks like, and we are looking for, you know, our next movement will probably be a little more exaggerated because of that.
Your analysis over in the wheat pit.
Wheat pit, you know, we got the rains we were looking for over the weekend. We got some good snow cover in a lot of places. We took a lot of weather premium out of it because it's time to sit back and assess, you know, whether we're going to get more rain and how much the rain we got did help. And I think just because of the sharp downward movement we've seen, the amount, we saw some short covering and maybe a little speculative buying here yesterday and today.
Do we look at this market to move essentially sideways through the remainder of this week and maybe into the planning intentions report?
You know, I think we're going to take a look at the weather to see if there is more fronts coming through the hard red wheat area, number one. And then number two, we are going to be looking at the planting intentions report very heavily. But the near-term reaction is going to be looking at weather.
Over at the Merck and the lean hog pit, a lot of red ink there. And as far as I can tell, looking around, it looked like it was both commercial and non-commercial selling.
Yeah, I think that we run into some sell stops over there. A lot of things happening. You know, we're basically backed up in the beef moving here right now. But look, the cold storage report that we're looking at to come out looks basically to tell us we've got an awful lot of pork and there's been an awful lot of chicken backed up because of the bird flu stuff. So a lot of competition to the pork that's sitting out there in huge numbers.
This afternoon, we got the estimates from the trade for the March cattle on feed report. That coming out on Friday at 2 o'clock. And boy, these are some big numbers. On feed 107.5, placed 102.6, and marketed 98.3. Your reactions, Wayne?
Well, if you look on what's happened to cattle over the last 3 weeks, I think the trade's been looking for those type of numbers. You know, look how much we've dropped down. So, you know, a lot of that's already figured into the market. That wouldn't be mad cow disease. Case of mad cow disease sure didn't help us any on trying to build back up from this. So I don't think it'll be quite as disastrous as it could have been if we were starting at a lot higher levels.
Thanks much, Wayne. Have a great day.
Thank you, Dave.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Wayne joins us every Tuesday afternoon on the Closing Market Report. Winter weather advisory for light snow and considerable blowing and drifting snow is in effect for Champaign, Christian, Clark, Coles, Cumberland, DeWitt, Douglas, Edgar, Logan, Macon, McLean, Moultrie, Piatt, Sagamon, Shelby, and Vermilion counties until 4 o'clock this afternoon. Tonight in Illinois, clearing from west to east. In Indiana, cloudy with scattered flurries early, then clearing from west to east overnight, lows ranging from 13 to 23 degrees. And tomorrow, partly to mostly sunny, highs ranging from 35 degrees in some central Illinois locations to 45 degrees in the far south. In agricultural news, several senior Japanese officials Monday rejected answers from U.S. officials to a long list of questions about the safety of American beef. Beef industry officials say that means American beef could be banned from the Japanese market for the foreseeable future. The answers from the U.S. officials were in response to a 20-question query by the Japanese government about the safety of beef shipments to Japan. Most of the questions dealt with a shipment of veal in January that caused the Japanese to reinstate a ban on U.S. beef. The next step is for the two governments to form a panel of high-ranking technicians to meet in Japan starting the week of March 27th to discuss the results of the 20 questions. Lynn Heinze is Vice President of Information for the U.S. Meat Export Federation. Heinze says the veal mishap, illegal bone chips in a shipment to Hong Kong, and a third case of BSE in the U.S. gives Japan plenty of reasons to keep its U.S. beef ban in place.
The politics of the situation are such that just about anybody who has an opportunity to take a shot at the United States is taking a shot at them, and we're providing plenty of opportunities to be targets in having additional cases, having problems with the actual process of clearing product that is supposed to go to Japan.
And Heinze says the U.S. beef issue has become a political hot potato in Japan, where the sitting prime minister and his party are up for re-election this year.
We're in an election season in Japan. The Diet is currently meeting. The opposition party is trying to do whatever they can to make the Koizumi administration look like it's bringing problems to Japan, either of their own doing or in the case of, you know, approving U.S. product too early.
Scientists at McLaughlin Research Center have discovered a new way to study prions, the infectious agents that cause brain-wasting diseases. And now USDA says it's looking for a second offspring from an Alabama cow that contracted mad cow disease. USDA says the second calf is about 1 year old. Government officials found the first offspring, a six-week-old calf, on the same Alabama farm where the infected cow was discovered. USDA removed the calf and sent it to its National Veterinary Services Laboratory in Ames, Iowa, for observation. USDA says it will eventually test the calf for BSE. Meanwhile, investigators may never figure out where the BSE Alabama cow was born and raised. Officials are saying the trail seems to have gone cold at an auction where the cow was sold last year. The fledgling U.S. ethanol industry is anticipating some growing pains that could bring it unwanted attention this summer. The Energy Department is predicting the ethanol industry might not be ready to satisfy the expected summertime jump in demand. And by crimping the overall supply of motor fuel, this could contribute to a spike in gasoline pump prices at the start of the country's peak driving season. The Energy Department report also detailed challenges that ethanol producers will have in getting fuel to key markets along the East Coast because of railroad, trucking, and other distribution bottlenecks. Meanwhile, the Senate took a step toward potentially increasing domestic fuel supplies. Jonna Miller is with the American Farm Bureau Federation, and she has this report.
The Senate approved a provision to allow drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, known as ANWR, in its version of the 2007 budget resolution.
We're very excited and think this is the first positive step in the development of ANWR.
American Farm Bureau Energy Specialist Ann Steckel says farmers and ranchers care about this because they're eager for development of domestic fuel sources.
They certainly operate a lot of farm equipment, and you need your gas to run that as well as other equipment on the farm. In addition, natural gas prices are at an all-time high, and that, of course, is what is used to go into fertilizer. And so for farmers and ranchers, this is a very important issue.
But Steckel says there's still a long way to go, and passing the same provision in the House will be difficult.
What we're trying to do is work with others to have this language included in the House bill like it was included in the Senate bill. But there will be a strong movement by folks that do not support this.
Jonna Miller, Washington.
USDA's Farm Service Agency is considering making major changes to the loan rate for rice, and rice industry officials are calling the proposal a debacle. FSA officials reportedly have met and held conference calls with rice industry officials this month on the plan to change the loan rate. The USA Rice Producers Association says the FSA plan would cut the loan rate for long grain rice by 39 cents and increase the medium grain and long grain rice loan rate by $1.17 per hundredweight. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Top Bush administration officials Monday predicted that the deadly H5N1 avian influenza strain will likely be found entering the U.S. as early as this year. At a rare joint news conference yesterday, U.S. Department of Agriculture Secretary Mike Johanns, Health and Human Services Secretary Mike Leavitt, and Secretary of Interior Gail Norton announced the completion of a new early warning system to detect highly pathogenic avian influenza in wild migratory birds in the U.S. Johanns stressed the avian strain of H5N1 is still a bird disease, and human-to-human transmission of the disease has not occurred.
If you leave here today remembering nothing else that I tell you, I hope you'll remember two points. One, a detection of the high-path H5N1 virus does not signal the start of a pandemic. The virus is not easily transmitted person to person. People who have become ill in other countries have had direct contact with infected birds. Two, properly prepared poultry is safe to eat. A detection of H5N1 should not cause a loss of confidence in the safety of poultry.
Thus far, Asian bird flu has been found in Asia, Africa, and Europe. The interagency plan outlines five specific strategies for early detection of the virus in wild migratory birds, investigating disease outbreak events in wild birds, expanding monitoring of live wild birds, monitoring hunter-killer birds, use of sentinel animals such as backyard poultry flocks, and environmental sampling of water and bird feces. Norton says announcements of bird flu in the U.S. could come frequently this year, But whether any particular outbreak is the deadly H5N1 strain will take days of testing.
We anticipate that presumptive H5N1 results may be announced 20 to 100 times this year. But those initial tests do not tell us whether it is highly pathogenic or whether it is of the low pathogen variety. We will not know that information until tests are completed that take another 5 to 10 days to perform. During this wait, the press and the public will need to realize two things. First, that this is a disease of birds and not humans at this point. And finding a bird with the disease does not signal a pandemic.
Since 1998, the USDA has monitored both the Alaskan and Atlantic flyways for highly pathogenic H5N1. Beginning in 2005, the Department of the Interior has also monitored the Pacific Flyway, and neither agency has found strains of the Asian H5N1 bird flu in samples taken from birds as of yet. Johans says even if highly pathogenic bird flu turned up in a U.S. domestic poultry flock, the outbreak would be quickly contained, just as it was in Texas in 2004. And he says the U.S. poultry industry has strong financial incentives to watch for and contain bird flu outbreaks.
U.S. poultry producers understand the importance of wiping out this virus the moment that it is detected. This is a $29 billion industry in the U.S., and our producers are as eager as we are to protect the safety of our poultry. An important point, producers know they'll be compensated for destroyed birds. Our producers have demonstrated that they will call us at the first sign of sick birds, knowing that with high path strains of bird flu, we reimburse them for the birds that we destroy.
Levitt says that there has been 3 human bird flu pandemics in the last 100 years, and that the H5N1 virus looks a lot genetically like the Spanish flu virus of 1918 that killed millions. Levitt stressed at this point the H5N1 virus remains largely confined to birds, but he says the Bush administration is taking no chances when it comes to human health.
My colleagues have mentioned the precautions that are being taken for wild birds in domestic flocks. I would like also to mention to you the 5 major areas of preparation that we have with respect to humans. The first is monitoring the disease, developing vaccines, stockpiling countermeasures, coordinating state and local preparedness, and working on ways to talk about this effectively to give people a sense of perspective and planning.
Federal regulators, in another sign of the increasing concern over a possible avian flu pandemic, moved to ban the poultry industry from using 2 major groups of human antiviral drugs, including Tamiflu, to treat their flocks for fear that they may reduce their effectiveness in treating humans. Yesterday's announcement marked the first time the FDA has banned human antiviral drugs for animal use. FDA officials are calling the move a precautionary measure. This is Dave Dickey, AM 580 Agriculture.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Polls are open until 7 p.m. Central Time tonight in today's Illinois primary election. Many precincts in the Champaign-Urbana area reported slow going this morning, but a handful say they've had steady turnout, mainly in areas where there are key local races or referenda. Across Illinois, election officials say the brand new electronic voting machines, brought in to replace the old punch card units, are causing a few headaches. Attorney General Lisa Madigan says her office has received some early reports of the new machines not working. In Champaign County, Rhonda Rona of the county clerk's office says the vendor of the new voting machines had to come in to replace 2 of the counting machines this morning, but she says otherwise the new optical scan voting procedure is working well. Central Illinois didn't get quite as much snow as feared, but the region is still getting a healthy dose of winter. The storm that began overnight has dropped 9 inches of snow in Morgan County, west of Springfield. Mattoon has reported about 7 inches. 6 inches had fallen in Shelbyville. The snowstorm caused the judge in the Maurice Legrone Jr. murder trial to cancel proceedings for today. Central Indiana residents are cleaning up after an early spring snowstorm that left over 7 inches of snow on the ground in some areas and many wrecks during the morning commute in Indianapolis. Indiana State Police reported dozens of accidents, some with injuries, none life-threatening. Vice President Dick Cheney told troops inside a hangar at Scott Air Force Base today that the situation in Iraq is continually getting better, but he acknowledged misgivings many Americans have about the administration's war strategy. Cheney said the progress hasn't come easily, but it has been steady. Cheney's appearance at the base was one piece of an administration push to counter polls that show waning public support for the war. Former DePaul basketball coach Ray Meyer was remembered at his funeral today in Chicago as both a legend and a hero. Among those attending was a who's who of basketball greats, including Isaiah Thomas, Larry Brown, Bobby Knight, and Mark Aguirre, one of Meyer's greatest players. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon, Don.
Good afternoon.
Well, as I begin to sort out the weather picture, it looks to me like of all the states, Nebraska might got the most snow.
Well, they certainly did, just absolutely hammered right in the bullseye. But the snow did cover a large chunk of South Dakota, many areas of Kansas and eastern Colorado and eastern areas of Wyoming, but the heaviest precipitation in those central and south-central areas of Nebraska. But this was a much-needed storm. The Plain States, the hard winter wheat, and the other winter wheat areas did finally get some precipitation, although there were some areas that didn't get as much as we'd like to see, especially in far southwest Kansas and southeast Colorado. While they got moisture, the heavy stuff just missed those areas.
So a little bit of a still a lingering H2O deprivacy there, I guess.
Yeah, definitely in that west southwest Kansas area. They got some moisture, but they certainly need a couple of more wet spring storms.
Going to be cold the rest of the week?
It really will be. Temperatures all across the nation, coast to coast, are going to be averaging below normal through the rest of this week and into next week. We don't see severe cold, but at the same time, temperatures will trail as much as 5 to 10 degrees below normal across most of the nation, especially here in the Heartland, the Midwest, the Great Lakes, and the Northern Plains.
I want to go back to the wheat area in just a minute and ask you, now that this storm has gone across the central part of the U.S., whether we go back to that old familiar pattern where the southwestern plains doesn't see any rain.
Well, that is definitely going to be a risk, but the Pacific continues to churn out quite a bit of storminess. This last storm has the potential for maybe another one or two of these like this coming on in. We see that potential later this month and into early April. I don't think we're going to go back to being as dry as we were before, but on the flip side, those southern plains, those southwestern plain states, are still not in the best position to get the heavier precipitation, although I do see precipitation chances coming. I think when you add up the rest of this month and into early April, though, they'll still be lagging behind.
How far south will the frost and freezes go into the Delta?
Well, they could go pretty far south tonight, down into Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi. Don't think it's going to make it to the panhandle of Florida, but they could get all the way into the southern sections of Alabama and Mississippi and Georgia tonight.
Let's turn our attention to Brazil, where it looks like they received some scattered showers, and I don't know, does it look like they're going to get some more, particularly in the southern half of Brazil?
It certainly is looking that way. While Argentina is going to be much drier, shower activity in Brazil will continue. Nothing excessively heavy, but there will be a few pockets of possible delays due to some rainfall in Brazil, especially central and southeast Brazil.
And over in Australia, they've been needing some rain now for a while in the south. Are they going to get any?
Well, unfortunately, not very much. There is a little bit of shower activity in the forecast, but all the rain with the remnants of Larry in the northern and northwest areas of that country.
What areas are you keeping an eye on globally?
Well, obviously watching what's going on in South America with conditions down there. But also, as we go off into southern sections of South Africa, looks like they're going to be getting a little bit more wet in the northern areas, but drier in the southern areas.
Thanks much, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Don joins us every Tuesday afternoon here on AM 580. And that's today's closing market report. Be sure to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:49 Central Time for our first in-depth look at the weather as well as the day's markets. And you can listen to today's futures analysis and weather reports on the World Wide Web. Go to WILL.ag. Well, it's actually now WILLAG.org. Still trying to get used to the new handle. WILLAG.org. This is Dave Dickey.